It's Extension 720 here on WGN Radio with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, very excited to bring Owen Keenan in studio. He's the author of Dugan's Bistro and The Legend of the Bearded Lady. It's a conversation about 1970s gay nightclubs in River North. It's very interesting to think about where Dugan's Bistro is, 420 North Dearborn. So think about where that's at. That's next to the House of Blues. Many tourists and people in Chicago know that area very well and know it to be lined with Let Us Entertain You restaurants and other nightclubs for young professionals. Well, at a time in the 1970s, it was home to several gay nightclubs, including Dugan's Bistro, which was Chicago's Studio 54 years before Studio 54 even existed. So we'll have that conversation coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. As we continue our theme tonight, if we're going to understand each other, then maybe we need to understand each other. Bilingualism matters. That's the message being sent by a new Chicago project bringing together Chicago universities. The goal is to find ways for Chicago area schools to commit to teaching multiple languages. Over 2.5 million people in the Chicago area speak a language other than English. And even though CPS and other public schools have made strides to teach more English-Spanish dual language programs, there's still a need for more. We don't just live in a world that speaks the same language or even two of the same languages. Enter Bilingualism Matters, a national program looking to build a Chicago chapter. They've partnered with scientists and linguists at Northwestern, Loyola, UIC, DePaul, and the University of Chicago. So how do you teach more students and train more teachers to take on more than one or even two languages? In studio tonight, Kim Patowski, Spanish professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and Kara Morgan Short, interim associate director, School of Literature, Cultural Studies, and Linguistics at UIC. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so why don't we start? Bilingualism matters. What is this? I'll start with you, Kara. What is this? Give us an idea of where this comes from.
Sure. So this was an organization that was started in Edinburgh in the United Kingdom by Antonella Sarace as a way of outreaching to the community regarding research that's performed about bilingualism. So there's many researchers all over the world that do all sorts of research about bilingualism and language learning, and we decided that it's not enough for us to talk about that research among ourselves, mm-hmm. but we really need to outreach to the community, share information with the community that's relevant to different areas, to education, to health, to people's what they choose to speak at home. And so we formed this group, yeah. Bilingualism Matters, to start with that outreach.
It's amazing to me looking at this story and trying to get a better understanding of the culture surrounding linguists and scientists when it comes to bilingual education. There are a lot of myths that are surrounding this that you're trying to debunk with this. Kim, talk a little bit about what are the myths when it comes to bilingual education.
Right. It's very curious. We don't have an exact figure what percentage of the human population is bilingual or multilingual, but it's estimated about 65%. So
wow.
The majority of the planet is bilingual or multilingual. But in this country, 80% of people say that they only speak English, and they kind of like it that way. I mean, you don't have to look very far to find cases of linguistic repression, linguistic bullying, etc., right? So I think that is due our sort of staunch monolingualism, at least two myths. One is that bilingualism will lead to societal problems. We're going to become a Tower of Babel, start to hate each other and fall apart, et cetera, which absolutely not true. Research indicates it's not true. And the other myth is that somehow we will damage individuals on some level. If I had a nickel for every pediatrician, teacher, people who should know better, well-meaning, but should know better, who tell parents, oh, stop speaking Polish to your kids, stop speaking Korean, stop speaking Spanish, your child's going to become confused. Your child's going to get left behind. It's absolutely not true. In fact, any quick glance over social media, at least on mine, seems like every week there's a new study showing how bilingualism is an advantage cognitively, socially, educationally, et cetera.
Is this the kind of thing where, because it, and looking at some of the research as well, there seems to be this idea to hang on to your indigenous language that many people in many different families may say, I'm going to hold on to this one. Maybe that's out of fear. I don't want to learn a new language, but this is the most important to me. So part of it too is trying to get people to move off of that spot, and especially English speaking people who are like, you know one language, but it's time to learn another.
Well, I think if we're going to frame what you just said in terms of immigrant people who are coming here, that's absolutely not what we see. We don't see families who say, I'm here and I don't care about learning English.
Right.
No one knows better than them the need to learn English. They've suffered tremendously for the lack of English. In fact, what I see when I'm invited to parent groups, school districts who want to implement a dual language school program, the Anglophone families are all for it. It's the immigrant families who are very often scared. They say, I want my child to learn English. That's the most important thing. And when you show them the research that says, actually, if you want your child to learn English very, very well, what you need to do is educate them through their home language, and you'll see that the English comes in. And that's totally counterintuitive. I get it.
Yeah.
But that's what the research shows, and that's why Bilingualism Matters was formed, is to get this research out into the community so that parents can fight for their rights and say, no, I'm not going to switch the language I speak at home because somebody gave me bad information. Or, yes, I am going to choose a dual language program for my child. It will not confuse them. In fact, it will probably accelerate their English language acquisition and, as you just mentioned, help sort of cure my family's monolingualism.
You know, when we think about students, automatically we think about how you teach these kids. And, okay, maybe we're going to get in the spot where you need to learn or have dual language programs earlier on in their development. But it's also about the teachers. It's also about finding people who are right to teach these languages, not just Spanish, but other languages that are multilingual. So where do we find the teachers for this? I mean, because that seems to be one of the issues when it comes to resources.
Right. So so we need to create more teacher education programs that are focused on bilingual education and on second language learning. So, for example, at UIC, we do have a program where we train teachers to become language teachers, but that focus is mostly on teaching students who are English monolinguals to learn new languages.
In high school,
whereas we need a much more comprehensive approach to preparing teachers to teach bilingual classes from very early on, like you mentioned, up and through high school, because the bilingual students in high school, they don't need to be in a traditional second language course being introduced to here's how you count in a new language and here's how you say the days of the week.
Right.
They already have that, so they really need a different approach in how they're taught to foster their own bilingualism to lead them to greater literacy and the ability to use that their own language more powerfully.
That's a great point. You don't think about that most of the way that I think about dual language or multi-language teachings is through rudimentary, meaning the beginnings, here's numbers, here's how you put sentences together. If somebody's already living a life where they're at dual language, that's not useful to them. They get lost in the shuffle and they may not be looking to learn anything more. Is it really about the framework of how we think about dual languages and multilingual education that we didn't start thinking more about the steps in which we teach this language?
Well, one of the outcomes of the myths that we mentioned before about this idea that somehow bilingualism is detrimental to children is that we start foreign language education way too late. If you're like me, you started probably learning Spanish or French when you were 14.
Right.
And you probably started by conjugating verbs and learning the colors and the numbers and the days of the week. That's too little, too late. Before No Child Left Behind was implemented, about a third of our elementary schools and three-fourths of our secondary schools taught foreign language classes. That's not a lot, but it's something. How well they taught it is a question open for consideration. After No Child Left Behind, those programs got decimated, and now you've got, it varies by state. I read that a national figure is only 18% of our kids, K through 8, are getting language education. New Jersey is the highest at 50. I believe Alabama was down towards the bottom. But if we really do want to have a bilingual populace, what we need to do is start in kindergarten and start by teaching half of the day in another language. There's no reason why any child should graduate from eighth grade monolingual.
You know, we stumble upon just the bigger idea of how you retrain the education system to take this on. Because when I think about fights over curriculum, they're always about what are the basic things that we're teaching our kids. And it may be reading, writing, arithmetic, that kind of, you know, arts gets in there, physical education gets in there. But there's always this tug, this push and pull about how much and how little and what is the mandatory minimum, really, when it comes to public schools having to give. So how do you convince state municipalities, state districts, other places like that, that this is important for the future of our kids when they're struggling to put meat on the bones, if you will.
Right. Well, I think you're absolutely right, and curricular fights are absolutely political fights. Whether you decide to teach evolution, whether you decide to teach sex ed, all these issues are extremely important and represent political ideologies. Language, too, represents a political ideology. And my sense is that it really goes against the grain of certain portions of society who don't want to see other languages, you know, sullying the United States. So I think it's up to those of us who have a different worldview who want to see more multilingualism. It's up to us, I think, from several different angles. It's got to come from the parents. I've seen school districts where parents are just banging on the doors to get dual language into their district. If you can get a superintendent, if you can get, and I will give a shout out to our new ISBE, Illinois State Board of Education director. She is a Latina who's very interested in dual language, so that can help. Local school boards, you have to try to come at this from a number of different angles. And here's the thing. You can still decide what you want to decide about curriculum. All we're saying is teach that curriculum, whatever it is you hashed out, in two languages.
Right. In studio tonight, that's Kim Patowski. She is a Spanish professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Kara Morgan Short is the interim associate director of the School of Literatures, Cultural Studies, and Linguistics at the University of Illinois Chicago. Bilingualism Matters is what we're talking about. Bilingualism Matters Chicago. We'll take a quick break and come back, continue the conversation here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. Talking about Bilingualism Matters, talking about dual language programs in schools tonight here on Extension 720. Kim Patowski is a Spanish professor at UIC. Also, Kara Morgan Short, interim associate director of the School of Literatures, Cultural Studies, and Linguistics at UIC. Bilingualism Matters Chicago is a new chapter of a national movement. But I'm fascinated because you said that you wanted to start the best policy or the best curriculum would be to start kids early, start them in kindergarten. And obviously that's not happening. It happens in some school districts. It may not be happening in others. Does the human brain, does it change the way that it takes on a new language as you get older? Can you learn more effectively at, say, age 5 than you could at age 25?
So the kind of research that I do speaks to this question really well. So we actually look at the brain and how the brain processes new languages when people are learning these languages past any purported critical period, so after they're 14 or after they're 18. And when you look at this neuroscience-based research, you actually find that the brain is really capable of learning language even in adulthood. We still have that capability. It doesn't drop out. Now, it's much harder, but not necessarily because our brains are really wired differently as adults than it is than they are when we're children. The way we're exposed to language is so different when we're adults. We might have a few hours of exposure to language where children have exposure to language all day, arguably, if they're in their you know, with their family. And we've done a study where we looked at different ways of training adults and have found that if you train them more in an immersion kind of context where they're listening to the language, they see what it means, they're not conjugating verbs, they're not studying vocabulary, but they're really immersed in how what this language expresses, their brains actually end up processing the language quite like a native speaker would, versus if you teach them more in a grammatical, traditional grammatical way, their brains are still capable, they can still learn the language, and we still see some neural processes that look like native speakers, but not the full spectrum that we see, the full spectrum of native speakers that was brought about by this kind of more immersion approach. So really being immersed and being immersed in the language in a real meaningful way seems to be important for language learning.
If I can jump in here, it's also true that language learning, I think, is driven by need, and a child needs to learn the language to get their needs met. I didn't start learning Spanish till I was 13, and, you know, not for nothing. My Spanish is pretty good, okay? So, yeah, your ability to learn does not decrease, and you talk about the processing ability remaining the same. Production does not. Production ability does not stay the same. If you've got three siblings who immigrate from China, one's 2, one's 10, and one's 15, I think we all know who's going to have an accent their whole life. They all might have the same cognitive ability to process their new language, but the productive ability, I think, is it's just arguably and demonstrably true that earlier is better. And when you're immersed in the language and you're getting that input for different reasons, you need it for to survive, basically. So it's not just the hours a day. Let's say you have a 6-year-old who's getting 6 hours of French a day, and then a 20-year-old who's getting 6 hours of French a day. The kind of French they're getting, same amount of time, is going to be very, very different. The 6-year-old's going to be much more concrete things. It's going to be getting their lunch. It's going to be things they need to do, whereas, you know, I'm not sure what that adult would be getting. So there's a lot of different factors that go into the different results that we see over and over and over when you compare older versus younger
languages. Are there harder languages than others to learn? Is it the kind of thing, rarely do I have linguists in the studio, but this idea that, you know, there might be, so you hear the German language, you're like, I'm not going to be able to pick that up, or Mandarin, where you're like, there's no way. Is that just our bias that's talking, or are there languages that are harder than others?
Some of that is bias, for sure, but the what was the Foreign Language Institute that did it? Somebody, maybe it was the Monterey, I think it was the Monterey group out in California that trains a lot of our military, I believe, in languages, came up with a 4-tiered scale. If you're a native English speaker, how difficult a different languages will be for you. And among the least number of hours required to gain basic proficiency, you had the Romance languages, and I believe... No, German was a little bit more. German was the second group. I believe the fourth group. Arabic was in there, because I'm trying to learn some Arabic right now, and I'm the worst student in the class. Chinese, Mandarin was in there, Japanese, and I forget the ones sort of there in the middle. But yeah, there is some data suggesting that certain languages are more, those that are more typologically similar to English are going to be, require fewer hours to acquire. But then some people argue with that Foreign Service Institute scale as well.
You know, it's funny because there's been times, I feel like in the last decade, or it might even go administration by administration, where there seems to be more of an emphasis on one language or another. There was a time when we were talking about Mandarin. Everybody in America needs to learn Chinese and Japanese because that's going to be the business language of the future. We've heard, you know, obviously with Spanish is one that's this country is going to be speaking primarily Spanish, and at a certain point we need to be up, we get our students up on Spanish. Did we see through that? Is that just political talk, or is there some truth to the idea that these languages may be more important than others?
Yeah, I would say that that's more driven by what the government sees as the needs of the languages that we need for critical areas.
And businesses, too.
And businesses as well. And they provide really nice scholarships, actually, critical language scholarships to have citizens go out into different parts of the world and learn these languages.
I think linguists in general try to remain agnostic about those kinds of questions. They're important questions, and certainly if someone says, I want to learn a language that will be useful to me in my life, we certainly understand that. But the brain doesn't care if you're speaking Finnish or Basque or some language that has 12 speakers. The brain doesn't care. Bilingualism is absolutely good for the brain, and once you've got two languages down, you can more easily add a third. So any kind of language development, bilingual language development that you put in there is a good thing.
Bilingualism matters. Chicago, the new charter here in Chicago, and two of the principals here, Kim Patowski, who's a Spanish professor at the University of Illinois Chicago, and Kara Morgan Short, who's the interim associate director at the School of Literatures, Cultural Studies, and Linguistics at UIC. Much more to talk about. We're out of time, but I definitely want to have you guys back to continue this conversation about how we process language and how we teach and our kids language, multilingual America. So thank you so much for being here, and good luck with Bilingualism Matters Chicago.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.